Inoho, please be seated.
Call Jan Manson. Is your full name Jan Marie Helen Manson?
Yes.
And is your farming business Kai Farming Limited at Omakau?
It is.
Did you prepare a brief of evidence dated the 5th of February 2021?
Yes.
And is it true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Thank you. On the board behind you, you'll see a map. Could you point out for the court where Kai Farming Limited is? Can you describe that in words for me?
Kai Farming is 4 kilometres northwest of the township of Omakau, straddling the Thompson's Creek catchment.
Thank you. Mrs. Manson, did you prepare a summary statement that you wish to read to the court?
I have.
Does the court have it? Oh, it's coming.
Yep.
Thank you, Mrs. Manson. Could you please just read your statement?
Thank you. I offer these words intended to extend a personal side to my submitted evidence. I farm a self-contained dairy operation on 550 hectares of land on Racecourse Road, Omakau, in partnership with my husband and son. I am proud of our business, proud that its success has been achieved of our own effort. It has taken a lifetime to reach this point. The 1.9 million annual operating costs of our business ripples out into our local community. That figure does not include interest and principal cost. Unavoidably, that goes overseas. I am proud of the team of 8 people carrying out the daily operations of the business. Their children attend the local school. They play sport in the local teams. They are members of the local fire service and are encouraged to be active in their community. I am proud of the stage of business maturity where family succession is now a reality. Not for empire building, consumptive growth at any cost, or selfish plunder of limited natural resources, but as an expression of my personal values of purpose, accountability, my place in the world, and my respect for the privilege of being alive in this age and in this country. Our business began investing in risk proofing in 2009. Some $3 million has been spent to date in hard infrastructure, dam water storage, bridging, protecting waterways, sensitive soils, pivot application of water, matching irrigation quantity to soil type and to the land use, scheduling of irrigation to soil moisture, precision tillage, precision fertiliser application, and precision application of effluent back to the land, with all records kept and reported on an annual basis. Now, at this stage, reinvestment in our business moves to soft infrastructure and application of new technologies and frameworks, with research and best practice supported by 4 industry bodies to whom we pay levies, 2 cooperatives of which we are shareholders, a joint industry, government and Maori Action Climate Plan, and with the cost of privately commissioned consultancy, we prepare to embrace new genetics feed types, on-farm practices. We safeguard our water quality. We measure farm nitrogen surplus and methane and nitrous oxide emissions, collectively reported as a universal metric of carbon dioxide equivalence, to first compare greenhouse gases regardless of sector or source, and second, to enable mitigation. I repeat, we measure and mitigate. Unlike the anonymous tragedy of the commons, of the dense stocking rate of urban human biomass, whose waste and stormwater systems, conveniently interchangeable when required, remove out of sight, out of mind, their detritus to the forgiving dilution of the sea. Through science and knowledge, we strive to position our business as nimble, responsive to change, to be relevant and accountable to the circumstances in 10 years, 20, 50 years in the future. The cycles of nature and the land are the long game. To the best of our ability, we position our business, along with its people, to work with these cycles, not against them. I'm delighted to plant seedlings that I can only imagine in their mature state. I am prepared to ensure our footprint on the land does not become a pug mark. Our ilk has a particular approach to life. We identify an issue, research the options, and then implement a solution. Which brings me to the other environment our business operates in. The long and dithering processes of bureaucracy and politics is anathema to our values and ethics. For example, since 2011, I have been part of several community representative groups planning and preparing for future water management and infrastructure solutions in our Manuherikia catchment. One recent aspect of which has been the collective catchment resource consent application submitted to ORC earlier this year in time to replace the remaining number of deemed permits expiring by October 2021. Our combined application includes a whole of catchment overview, a river management plan, tributary flow sharing arrangements, ecological and environmental studies giving consideration to existing and anticipated planning frameworks. However, now in nearly mid-2021, I feel I have the burden of Sisyphus, destined to roll his boulder repeatedly up the hills of Hades. While not denying the essential requirement for the overarching guidance of rules, or underestimating the inherent complexities of implementation, I do not believe it is too much to ask for a crisp, decisive, effective legislative environment that has been developed from facts and science, genuine collaboration, foresight, and a true desire for practical solutions, and achieving this in a timely manner. Not an unwieldy legislative environment that is too late getting to the coalface, too slow to keep its supporting paperwork up to date, with hastily conceived catch-up attempts that oversimplify complex issues, and is proving to be as costly to all parties as to effectively slaughter the goose, regardless of its egg-laying capability. Which is why I'm here today. I cannot stand by while regulatory failing impedes timely and effective decision-making for rural businesses and other interested groups who have offered their experience, particularly for those of us with dwindling years of contribution remaining. Regulatory failing sucks the trust, vitality, the resources, the spirit of cooperation from rural people. Lack of leadership divides their communities. The business uncertainty created dries up incentive for long-term planning and investment. Losing community support undermines the magnificent potential of grassroots solutions to grassroots issues. There are examples of those pathways already effective in Otago, such as Pomahaka Water Care Group, Tiaki Maniatoto, and the Otago Catchment Community. However, our very own fledgling Thompson's Creek Catchment Group, with MFE funding announced in October 2020, falters, awaiting the approval of a governance group. I acknowledge the signals for change. I have been working and preparing for it for a considerable period of time. We are ready. We want to get on with it. Please do not present us with an uncertain future from the inadequate and short-term offering that is PC7. Thank you.
I have no questions, ma'am.
Thank you. Ms. Melville.
Good morning, and thank you for the summary you've just presented. Looking at the paragraph in your summary where you refer to the investment made to date on hard infrastructure, when was that infrastructure, the establishment of that completed on your property?
So it began in 2009 and was cumulative to 2018. The final portion of the development coincided with the purchase of a neighbouring property, which was undeveloped.
And did you, during that time, was in terms of the... And I don't know if you've given an indication of the area of irrigation on your property.
Yes.
But was the area of irrigation expanded during that time?
I wouldn't say it was expanded. It was made more efficient. Pivot irrigation replaced wild flooding.
And what area of your property would be under a spray irrigation?
348 hectares.
And what area was under wild flood irrigation previously?
In 2009, the entire 550 hectares was in some form or other wild flood. So we have used the same water. There's no more water. We've changed the method of application.
And you will have heard questions of other witnesses this morning about being able to identify on a map the area under irrigation on your property. Is that something that you could easily do?
Very clearly.
I did have a question around the resource consent application that's been submitted to the council. And do tell me if you're not the right person to answer this question. But I'm particularly interested in the reference to the river management plan.
Yes.
And how that's intended to operate in the context of the application and the consents, and whether that management plan would form a condition of the resulting water permits, or whether it's a supporting overarching document that forms part of the application.
I would describe it as a supporting document that lays out the, for example, the flow sharing, of which I've already spent some time on this morning. So the complexities of the flow sharing that was described in the Lauder catchment is replicated on the catchment-wide scale. There has already been a flow sharing and river management of sorts for the past 30 years when the irrigation infrastructure was taken over or handed to the community by the Ministry of Works in the late 80s. So the river management plan defines or refines, if you like, and makes more formal a procedure for the entire catchment, irrigators, recreation, environmental aspects will all fit together, including the minimum flow and how that will be achieved.
So does that management plan I guess, in itself formalise the existing arrangements that you have, or is that more so the tributary flow sharing arrangements that you've referred to in your summary?
It's more than a formalisation. It's a blueprint for future management based on past management. It extends the existing and the current regime. To understand it a little bit more, there are only a few individuals who have had direct experience, operational experience, of managing the flow from Falls Dam through to the confluence of the Manuhirikia with the Clutha River. And to date, there's probably only one person who has that intimate knowledge. That role, the operational role, will be absolutely essential to coordinate all aspects of water flow, water management and the Manuhirikia catchment.
So in terms of that role, is that a role for a person moving forward that is captured in this the application that has been lodged with the council? Is that what you're...
Yes. That role can't be limited to one person. It has to be a successive role, or a role that has a very sound succession because of its importance. And it will need require the assistance of the hydrological model that's been developed by ORC. That model was first developed by the Manuhirikia Catchment Water Strategy Group, who commissioned its first version for modelling minimum flow and dam storage. So it's taken a new life as a regulatory tool, but also we envisage it as a river management tool.
And in terms of that being a tool, I'm just understanding how this fits in with the water permits that are being applied for. Is it intended that the abstractors that have the water permits that are granted would be operating under this management plan?
Yes.
And that would be recorded in the resulting water permits?
That would be ideal, yes. The intention was to demonstrate a working knowledge of how the river is managed now, or how it has been managed for the last 30 years, its current management, and the potential for that similar model for community water management to roll out in the future under the new permits.
So it's a blueprint, so to speak, for the future rather than a management plan that the abstractors would be required to work to under the permits.
They're one and the same. They are one and the same. Okay. The blueprint is how irrigators will work together. Thank you.
Re-examination. See, look, that's really interesting that you talk about there being the catchment being managed now and has been managed for the last 30 years, and that is your, I guess, your starting point to work up a new model and a new plan going forward in relation to your application. And why I say that's interesting is for the question that I asked Mr. Page, we don't have a sense yet of what you've been doing for the last 30 years, other than we can see people have been very busy.
What kind
And so we're sort of like gleaning, you know, trying to get a sense of this catchment. So the floor is yours. Tell me what, in terms of that model now, what's happening? Because at the moment we're struggling to connect dots. And don't get me wrong, I'm going to try and get there. I will get there, unless, of course, the evidence just doesn't exist. But I think you're telling me it does.
At the risk of sort of repeating perhaps information that's referred to in my original
You can repeat. I have about 15,000 pages of information or evidence, and it's not necessarily helpful to have 15,000 pages of evidence.
I'll keep it.
If you were wanting to actually get or drill down into what the issue is.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You go for it.
In July 2011, a meeting was convened by the Central Otago District Council, the Regional Council. The then CEO of ORC was Graham Martin. Attending were representatives of the Alexandra Agribusiness Professionals and the Manuherikia Catchment Irrigators. From that meeting, the Manuherikia Catchment Water Strategy Group was formed. An independent chair was subsequently appointed, and group participation was widened to provide an open table forum, but not limited to.
Now, I read this, and I still don't get a sense, except that I know that there's a great deal of strategising and people involved. In strategising, I mean that in a positive way, management. I want to know, what is the model currently for this river? What is the management plan that you're working to? I have a sense that there is something there that the... Yeah, and I want to know what it is.
Okay, so I'll skip a few years then. And we were certainly... the information that was gathered through that time, from 2012 to 2015, was intended... all working towards our consent renewal over deemed permits.
And so what I'm trying to do is just decouple that for the moment.
Okay.
I want to know, how is this catchment being, what is the catchment model now? Because I understand that is now the basis to go forward and maybe change or, you know, in your application, but I just want to know what's happening now.
Yeah. So in that case... I will fast forward to the Manuherikia Catchment Group, which was formed in 2019, or formally formed. It was a subset of Otago Water Resource Users Group. The role of that group was to coordinate all interests, to carry on the work, basically, of the strategy group, to keep a collective approach to... identify, well, what can the community, the irrigating community, live with as far as impact on their business due to reduced allocation or potential reduced allocation and the minimum flows that are going to be to be changed.
So you're talking again about the future, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, and I'm interested, if you like, in your past or in the current, because I have understood you to say that there is one person, perhaps one person, out there who knows from the mountains to the sea how this catchment is managed.
One person who knows from the Hawkden Mountains catchment to the confluence.
To the confluence.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess the river management plan is exactly that. It's a set of, it is a future document based on what we've been doing with anticipation of how it might work. I guess our position was to actually demonstrate a workable model to ORC.
Is it based on on existing practices, or is it based on proposed future practices?
The minimum flow is, of course, a future practice. We do have minimum flows that we adhere to existing.
Tell me about that.
There is as established earlier, a 500 litre per second residual at base of Falls Dam. Yep. There is an Environment Court set minimum flow at the Ofa Bridge of 800 litres per second. There is a voluntarily 900 litres per second set at the campground measure.
Yeah, that's down at Alex, is it?
Yeah, and it's been a line in the sand, if you like, that we can operate to this, and here's the changes within the flow sharing throughout the whole catchment to meet that flow.
Okay, so that's really interesting. That is all interesting. Starting with Falls Dam, 512 litres per second. Whose consent is that? Is that Pioneer's consent?
That's a Falls Dam consent.
A Falls Dam.
Or attached to the Falls Dam consent.
Who holds the Falls Dam consent?
Omakau Area Irrigation Company. Sorry, I beg it, the Falls Dam hold a consent to store water.
Yeah. So an entity called Falls Dam?
Yes.
And then Omakau, how does that come into this, or doesn't it?
Is the ownership structure of the Falls Dam.
So it's leaving 512 in the river, downstream of the dam. I guess there's no seasonal variation to that. That's 12 months per year.
It works in conjunction yep. with Pioneer Energy.
Yep.
So there's a balance between water that is taken for generation.
Mm. And tell me about that. Unless you can't, then it's fine.
So Pioneer Company generates, basically controls the Falls Dam level through the winter months.
Yep.
They have a contract to, or an obligation to, have the dam full at the end of August,
mm-hmm.
and where it is handed over to management from of the Falls Dam Company.
Who's the contract with?
I beg your pardon?
Who's the contract with?
Is with the Falls Dam Company.
So this is Pioneer to the Falls Dam Company?
Yes.
And Falls Dam Company to have that dam full at the... No.
That's, yes.
Pioneer to have it full at the yes. end of August. Yep. Okay. So the obligation... am I right in thinking the obligation is, well, the dam's full at the end of August, so you're going into your shoulder months and then into summer, and the obligation is only to spill or to let pass 512 litres per second, is that right?
I think the more important factor yeah. is the meeting the flow at OFA and,
yeah, it might well
and
be.
Campground rather than that
what's
500
coming through. Yeah,
litres.
So, okay, so tell me about OFA, 800 litres per second.
Yes.
Who holds the consent there?
It's not actually a consent.
Okay. What is that?
It's an environmentally caught at a flow rate that was set in the environment court in the 90s.
Okay. So it's a minimum flow at OFA?
Yes.
In the 1990s? Okay. And presumably part of Schedule 2 of the water plan or not?
I presume so. It's before my time.
Anyway, it's a minimum flow, not imposed as a condition on a deem permit or any of the deem permits for upstream or contributing tributary water.
I couldn't be sure if it's linked to those permits. It's a flow that is collectively, all the tributary and contributing water collectively work to maintain that flow.
Okay. How do they do that? When you say collectively work, how does that work?
That goes back to the operations operations manager, of whom I've already mentioned, who coordinates release, monitors and coordinates release of flow from Falls Dam, the level of Falls Dam, who organises the maintains and manages the flow sharing between all the parties. He has an oversight of where that water is, at what time, how long it takes to get from one end of the valley to the other, coordinating that flow and movement of water, making sure it's in the right place at the right time.
Who's that person employed by?
The Omakau Area Irrigation Company.
Okay.
Okay, so amongst other measures, he'd be spilling more water from the dam to ensure that 800 reaches, or to ensure that the minimum flow at Ophir of 800 litres per second is reached. Is that correct?
Yes.
What can he do? I think you're saying he's also managing other irrigation companies, at least, or schemes, but maybe also managing individuals who are taking off either the main stem or tributaries. Is that right?
He has the means to monitor intakes on, for example, the main race intake, the Omical company's main race intake. He monitors and manages the Dunstan tributary intake for the Omical company, the Lauder take, the Thompson's take, and coordinates those flows to make sure they're all working together.
In terms of the tribs contributing a flow, or yes, their own share, if you like, of flow, okay, into the Manahera Care, that'll be right? No? Or
yes,
into,
and back, eventually back to the Manahera Care.
Eventually back, yep.
And there is also coordination so outside his upper catchment area, which relates to irrigation takes further down the valley. So he has to know what they're doing, when they are taking also.
Who are they? Who are we talking about?
So the Chatto Creek catchment, the Manahera Gear Irrigation Society take at Ophir, and the Galloway Irrigation Company take. You appreciate it's a very dynamic system that ebbs and flows even on a diurnal basis, let alone with flow, rainfall, for example, in a particular part of the catchment, or that hasn't been received in other parts. So I guess, therefore, it's a totally moving target to maintain. And it's an ever watchful situation. He's has electronic metering, controlling gates and controlling flows, very reliant on all of those moving parts operating, reporting correctly, and being able to, I guess it's probably the main goal is actually to conserve as much water as possible in storage and in times when there is surplus. And when I say storage, I mean the false dam. And balancing that outflow as best as possible to make sure that irrigators, that the environment, that the dam reaches the end of the irrigation season with everything intact.
When you say everything intact,
preferably with enough water in the dam that still provides environmental flows. If it's a particularly dry season, evaporation rate can suck out a considerable amount of water that has to be allowed for in the falls dam storage calculations. He is monitoring daily the level of the dam, the inflow of the dam from the Forks measuring site up further in the catchment. Monitoring the forecasts.
I see why you say succession planning is going to be critical for that role,
absolutely.
Because it's not just a case of looking at gauges, and he would have to have a real sense and feel for the environment in order to be able to do his job, I imagine.
I would say it's probably engulfed his entire life passion, to be fair.
Okay. So you talked about him, the employee. What's his name? So I can.
Roger Williams.
Roger. Is this Roger the Roger who?
Roger the raceman.
Roger the raceman. That's what I was going to call
him.
But you better start that first. Okay. Roger Williams.
So he is, right?
Yes, he is.
Oh, yes.
Right. He'll be checking me out.
Also on
texting me, telling me either say more or say less. I'm not sure.
Okay. So Roger the raceman, whom I also know that he's coming on a site visit as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's looking at the intakes at Omical, Dunstan, Lauder, Thompson. Are these all intakes which are owned and operated, if I could put it that way, by Omical, or are they quite independent? No shareholders, no common directors, no relationship?
There is a very interrelated nature of takes. Mm-hmm. Omical, for example, mm-hmm. has takes off each of the tributaries.
Mm-hmm.
Along with those other permits that have already been sort of mentioned.
So he is able to, I took a note saying that Mr. Williams is monitoring Omical main take, the Dunstan tributary take, Lauder take, Thompson's take, is what he's monitoring there, schemes which are owned and operated or in respect of which there's some relationship with Omical Irrigation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, so infrastructure on those takes is owned by the company. There's also sub-schemes of Blackstone, Clearwater, Matakanui, County, Devonshire. A lot of those smaller, or some of the smaller takes, relate back to gold mining infrastructure.
Are they less important, if I could put it that way, in terms of their ensuring that you get 800 at Omical?
Some of those takes enter the river below the take, but everything above the take is very strongly... Sorry, everything above OFA is very strongly connected minimum flow.
Yeah. Okay. So Blackstone, which is a smaller race, smaller take, that is also important in terms of doing its pulling its weight, if you like, and for the 800 at OFA. Is that right?
Yes.
Omical has an interest or no interest in...
No direct interest in Blackstone.
So then how do you get the cooperation of... Is it a scheme in relation to Blackstone?
Blackstone is a scheme in its own right.
Yeah, how do you get their cooperation?
That's how it works. That's how it's always worked. And it has done for 30 years, perhaps longer.
Yeah. And so And that would also be true of the other schemes. You mentioned Blackstone, Clearwater, Devonshire, and I didn't get the last one.
County.
And none of those are Omical-related schemes?
Yes, they are.
Oh, they are. Which ones?
Blackstone is the only one in the upper catchment that is directly outside of Omical. Yes. However, the cooperation extends also to the lower catchment schemes. And takes.
And when you say lower, you mean below OFA?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Assist the understanding of the dynamics amongst the scheme.
I think this witness is going brilliantly.
I'm sensing from your questions that there's something that the witness knows that might assist you.
I don't know. What do you know that might assist me?
I
sense a great deal, you see, but so that's why you're on the stand, giving evidence.
Can you explain the ownership of the Falls Dam Company in terms of which of the schemes owns what?
The Falls Dam Company operates the Falls Dam. Omical Company owns the dam. Each of the schemes are a part of a Falls Dam agreement.
Yeah. Sorry, say it again. So Falls Dam operates Falls Dam.
Yes.
Omical owns Falls Dam.
Yes.
And what was the last thing?
The six irrigation schemes in the catchment have an agreement known as Falls Dam Agreement that they adhere to.
So when you said six,
remind us what they were, please.
Blackstone, Omical.
Sorry, Blackstone.
Omical,
yeah.
Manuhira Kia, sorry, I beg your pardon, it's four, and Galloway.
So four irrigation schemes have an agreement called the Falls Dam Agreement, which does what?
It's a signed up agreement that basically they adhere to the instruction, guidance and call for flow sharing as required by the Falls Dam Company.
How long has that been in place?
At least for the duration of time that it's been in community ownership, late 1980s, 88.
Right. Almost, yeah.
Yes.
Do I understand you to say that there is no agreement as with the counties or Devonshire or Clearwater, Lauder or Thompson's, Dunstan, because they are entities all within the Omeco umbrella?
Or, yes.
Yeah, or group of companies or related to that entity, yes. Is that
so
correct?
They all operate under the flow sharing that originates from the Falls Dam Company and filters down through to the companies, through to the schemes, and then to the tributaries.
Okay. So, in the case of, I'm going to get the names wrong, I think it's Ms. Gillespie, it could be Ms. Heckler, sorry, some
confidence.
Four dam permits off the Lauder, that river sometimes goes dry. What? And Lauder is one of the Omeco group. So what happens there? Do you see declining water trends, river likely to go dry? What happens in terms of their contribution? Or is it really, you're only speaking to yourself, it's your contribution, you turn yourself off to allow something in the river to remain?
I'm a little confused with the preoccupation with priorities.
Oh, okay. Well, you should ask your council, because he opened on the basis that there would be chaos if we didn't sort the issue of priorities out.
It's a past thing. To me, it's a past thing. Mm. It doesn't have a particular relevance going forward because there isn't a place for priorities in the...
Yeah.
And well, shoot me now if that's
I'm sorry, but your lawyer opened up on the grounds that there would be chaos unless something in relation to priorities. Now, we're working through what our options are.
Okay,
so why is there not chaos for you?
Let me let me have another go at that.
Mm.
The priorities are recognised within each individual flow sharing tributary agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But that still has to be an acceptable outcome to those irrigators within that catchment or that tributary.
Are you talking about, again, this is the consent to come or the application that you've made? Or what's now?
We're proposing that the flow sharing as
And I know that.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I know that. And I know that. What do I know? I know that, that the government had. 30 years ago, had thought that by the time you got to October this year that there would be a water plan in place, a land and water plan or in place that would have minimum flows or flow and allocation regime by the time these deemed permits expired. That's not the case. And the proposal for the Regional Council is that the deemed permits be replaced. But if they haven't got a minimum flow and allocation regime, which many won't, and there's nothing in the operative... if they haven't got that already as part of their conditions of consent, and many, if not most, won't, then what is the regime that we're going forward if it is not a resource consent? So, again, the case is, do you allow the long-term resource consents with an allocation and flow regime as proposed by your group? Or do you allow for short-term replacements? And if you do, is there a policy gap with the deemed permits that the court can do something, if it can actually do anything about it. So that's why we've appointed a friend of court, a QC, actually, to assist us on this. Because ORUG says there'll be chaos without it, and we're testing that proposition to see if there's anything that the court can do within the limits of this case to respond or not. So that's why we're very interested in priorities. Again, we're trying to establish what are our risks or what are your risks and how do you meet them.
It's a little out of my area of thought, but I would refer back to priorities were self-governing in a way, in that limited their effectiveness, or the strength of a priority was based on the availability of the water.
Yeah.
In times of plentiful water, there is no such issue or problem with priorities. Priorities are enacted to have been enacted to ensure that meaningful and equitable flow sharing is achieved. For me personally, I'm not affected by priorities.
Yeah.
So it's not something that applies to me on my farm. It doesn't apply to the water. If it's not there, it doesn't get taken. The deemed permits that we do have two deemed permits, not subject to priority, but subject to a residual existing.
Your deemed permits are subject to a residual?
Yes, and that's for environmental reasons. Now,
are these permits which have been replaced in the past under the resource management?
No, they expire in October 2021. It's an environmental residual for Galaxid.
That was very forward-thinking under the Water and Soil Conservation Act. So they've never been renewed during that?
No.
No.
However, I think the horse has bolted on the protection of the Galaxid, regardless of the water flow.
Yeah. Okay.
So under the current regime, if we stop thinking about what might be happening with the future applications, the system that you've been describing, does the, for example, those two louder ones that we heard about that are basically deemed permits that are held by particular farm entities, does the system that you're describing that Roger Williams runs, does that have a reach into those private takes?
Yes.
And so how does that work?
Communication and good neighbour behaviour.
So it's all based on good neighbour behaviour, really?
Communication and cooperation.
All right.
Yes. So the couple of permits, deemed permits that have been replaced and are now under the RMA are part of the flow sharing agreement. Yes, definitely. They're not outside that.
So what happens if people don't want to be part of the good neighbour group?
They are put under extreme pressure to do so. And if we anticipate that any people do actually want to stand outside the group, we'd almost go as far to oppose their renewal on that grounds. Peer pressure.
So just to be clear, under the existing arrangements, if you like, the reach is into say in the case of Lauder, into the laudatory tributary, not just the Armacol assets and interests, but also other individual permit holders.
Yes.
Is that what you say? Right.
Yes.
Okay. And that is, yeah.
They've not signed up to anything. This is all done on a voluntary basis with cooperation and good neighbour.
Over the last few months prior to submitting our catchment application, those sharing agreements have been made more formal. They are written. I'm not 100% certain if they've actually been signed up to. But they are certainly written and understood, with volumes agreed.
Yes, but does that only relate to arrangements as part of the application, or might they continue on under permit renewals potentially?
As an example, Lauder Tributary have already trialled their flow sharing agreement. Dunstan has had a significant portion of the irrigation season has been trialling their flow regime. There's quite significant infrastructure changes proposed for the Clearwater flow sharing, and Thompson's has also got arrangements imminent or part of their understanding for flow sharing. So will they carry on? Will those trials carry on over the next 6 years? I'm not sure that they will. There's a couple of streams of thoughts on that one, whether we have got anything to gain by continuing to trial our proposal, our tributary and flow sharing proposals, or whether irrigators are of the mind that, well, actually, we will just continue meeting our known factors of minimum flow, 2 points over campground. It's not decided, and it's not for me to decide or to say on their behalf.
No.
Oh, but there has been some discussion of it.
It's certainly in some people's minds, and it is certainly something that needs to be collectively agreed to. Yes.
Mm. Okay. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you. Mm. All right. And I guess perhaps one of the considerations as to whether that continues is the value the value of that in terms of the future land and water management plan, which is to come, that's the plan to come. Yeah, would that be fair?
I guess catchment engagement, and I've said, it's been ongoing since 2011. There are some people who... It was just a law of averages. There is a percentage of the irrigating community who are quite happy to not be involved or not be cognizant with the changes that are happening around them until it's in their face. There's levels of understanding, there's levels of participation. I would say that, and that is beyond the basic cooperation of flow sharing and pro rata take reduction as dry conditions kick in or require it. Well, that happens regardless. But not everybody is as open to, well, I need to know everything about this. I'm prepared to give up my time and energy to be part of these discussions. They prefer to have information sort of perhaps that comes to them. Some are more active than others. Okay, I'm digging a wee hole here.
No, that's fair enough. That would just be human nature, wouldn't it?
So I guess the reality is I can't speak for people who have a particular disillusionment with the activities over the last 9 years. Those people have been asked to contribute reasonably large sums of money to support through the strategy group years all the information that we thought we needed to get. We've spent hundreds of thousands. We've spent millions on it. And I have to put my hand up and say I was part of that team of people who promoted the why. Why are we doing this? I had an answer. The how are we going to do it? Here it is. Pay over here and we'll provide the solution. And that came to nothing. Mm. And I actually feel a significant degree of responsibility around that. So the demise of the strategy group and the failure of any particular investment in the Falls Dam infrastructure, which was one of the names of the game, and that problem hasn't gone away at all.
Mm.
The ageing infrastructure of the irrigation distribution. Mm. We have now, with the Manuhirikia Catchment Group, it was a whole step up in engagement in the entire catchment. I would say that it's at a level of mutual trust and we're working together here for an outcome. That's how the catchment is right now.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're still spending large amounts of money on behalf of these people.
Mm-hmm.
It's been done at haste, or rather it's been commissioned at haste to meet deadlines and when that information is required. I have a genuine fear that with a short-term rollover, all this money that we have spent gets to another pile of archive, and I have to turn around and face these irrigators and say, oh, sorry, guys, we didn't pull it off. Wait 6 years, we'll do it all again.
Hmm.
10 years, 15 years, how long is it going to take? And what information are irrigators going to be obliged to provide and pay for to achieve these outcomes? I don't know. I can't answer that. And I'm really struggling to look irrigators in the eye and say, sorry, guys, we've done it again. Spent your money, achieved nothing.
Mm.
That's big for me. Personally, that's big for me.
I've not been in your position, but I understand what you're saying and I can hear the frustration in your voice, and I don't think you've got anything to apologise for. I think they're very lucky to have somebody like you at the helm.
The helm's not quite the right term. We're America's Cup sailing. We're all doing it together. Six, ten, eight, five of us.
Mm. But nothing's lost. Whatever the outcome of this process, nothing's lost because you've got at least a community which is now moving together, although there might be some stragglers and outliers there, but, you know, that's folk moving together. And you've undertaken an enormous amount of research.
Thank you. I find that very encouraging to hear you say
You've got nothing to apologise for. I really do think people are lucky to have you and also the other witnesses you've heard today along on this. Okay, so getting to understand the Manuhirikia better. So Roger Williams works in works across all of the catchments. The catchments themselves, and again, Lauder's a good example because we've had evidence about Lauder today. Lauder itself is working on those relationships as between permit holders. And then Lauder, as an entity, is working with Roger Williams, who's looking at managing the main stem flows down to the... And that's how it works.
Yes.
And that's, and no doubt there would have been changes over the last 30 years, but and perhaps particularly since 2011, that being a critical date when it sounds like groups started to form together with a strategy. But that is how it's working currently. And I will pick up with the e-planner or two about whether that minimum flow is picked up anywhere, whether it's in Schedule 2A, whether it's picked up by anywhere by resource consent, but that's beside the point. That's how you're managing it. And then we get down to Alex, which has 900 litres per second at the campsite. Yeah. And presumably that is working the same way in terms of Roger Williams working in with other schemes and other water user groups below OFA, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
The four schemes all have their own operations manager.
Yeah.
Roger has, Omakau has a contract with the Falls Dam to manage the river as such.
Yeah.
So it's the overlying responsibility is with Roger to keep the communication, the information flowing, the understanding of the period of time taken from release of water at Falls Dam to reach those critical points of measurement.
Okay. Below Ophir, there's, did you say, Chaddo's, Galloway, Manahitakia irrigation?
Yes.
And what's the fourth one? That's
Chaddo is a sub-scheme, which is also fed fed from the Thompsons take for Omakau, and there are a number of deemed permits in there that form the Chaddo Creek takes.
So you noted four, and
The fourth company is Blackstone.
Blackstone,
at the top.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought Blackstone was is Blackstone above and below Ophir?
Above.
Above, okay. And below Ophir is?
Manahirikia scheme and Galloway.
And Galloway. So there's two schemes below Ophir.
Yes.
Yep. And you pick up another 100 litres per second of water in the river. Is that right?
Oh, between... Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. It's not as simple as that.
No.
Sorry. It comes and it goes many times. It comes that 100 litres per second between the two comes and goes from various sources many times.
Okay.
Yep, sorry. I just actually wonder if you've got a schematic of the catchment that would be really handy to see where there are inflows, outflows. Scheme takes.
Do we have that? Sitting on a helicopter going,
well,
I think this would be useful.
Yesterday on the return from our site visit, we did have a discussion about how such a thing would be really useful.
Oh,
and if we'd had it from the very beginning, that would have been even better.
I can't believe it's not been provided.
So do we have
We have got a lot of material, but I don't believe we have that.
Okay, I'll make sure that gets to you.
Oh, that would be good. You know, that's why I'm asking you 101 questions.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Okay, that is why I'm asking you one-on-one questions, because I know something works. I just need to know what is the thing that works, and I think I've now got it in terms of 512, 800, 900 litres per second at three different points. I understand what the key relationships are. There'll be both formal relationships which have been documented and hitherto or maybe now formal relationships with other schemes on the river. Understand that that with Lauder as the example, the relationships with the Lauder water user group, Omakau has an interest or assets in that area, but there are existing relationships with across the entire Lauder catchment which Mr. Williams is interfacing with.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that Lauder example is replicated in Dunstan and Thompson's and Chaddo. So there's it's quite complex. There's many moving parts.
Yes. Okay. Good.
Can I just ask two questions? In terms of the map on the wall behind you, there's a big red line.
Yes.
Is what you've been talking about cover that whole area?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
I think there's a fair few more races than what's shown there. I think they were just the principal races.
But in terms of the outline?
Yes, the outline it essentially describes the catchment.
Okay.
Yeah, there are... Absolutely, there's outliers to that, but that is essentially correct.
And my second question, in terms of this interrelationship between all these different entities, is that shown in sort of diagrammatic form, if you've got somewhere? Or?
I believe that we can provide something that would actually help with understanding,
how they all interplay with each other. Yeah, that would be helpful, I think.
It would.
I have a further question. It's in relation to your paragraph 39 in your evidence. Yes.
Paragraph 39.
Yes. And that's the Thompson's
yes.
Creek group. And I was just wanting to understand a little bit more what that involved.
It began because the area straddling, the farms straddling Thompson's Creek are predominantly fully irrigated, pivot irrigated. They are predominantly dairy. Thompson's Creek at State Highway 85 has a... it's actually very convenient to measure and it has been identified with water quality problems. Dairy farmers are very sensitive about being accused of contributing to water quality issues, and that was the initiation of the group. Let's front foot this, let's get some thought around this, and it has grown and is no longer a Dairy NZ group. We have received support from Beef and Lamb New Zealand. The membership of the group has extended to include all land use properties in the Thompson's catchment. Regional Council had done a series of water quality testing at various points along the creek, and they funded that for 12 months. It quickly became obvious that water quality testing raised more questions than answers, which was of considerable consternation to people who are searching for a way to fix things. I believe over time that the water quality in Thompson's Creek actually has, in particular relation to E. coli, has been improving. So the group as it is now has, as I say, had support of Beef and Lamb. We have an independent facilitator appointed, which is absolutely magic because someone who's getting paid actually puts it first and not like voluntary people. That group has been named the catchment has been named an exemplar catchment and has been awarded funding from MFE. So we have a number of projects and ideals that we'd like to achieve. Among those are, as I say, the protection of native species, threatened species. We are really interested in how water quality is affecting those populations, the biodiversity, the invertebrate type populations. We are particularly keen not to reinvent any particular sort of wheel and follow protocols of other groups that are doing very good things around catchment water quality. We've received this funding. We've got projects priced, ready to go. We have stalled for the appointment of a governance group. To be fair, that governance group, the likely makeup of that group is probably already heavily involved in their respective takes on Plan Change 7. And I can understand why there just hasn't quite been the focus on, well, let's get a governance group together, let's concentrate on actually achieving something on the ground. For me, because Thompson's Creek does come through our property, I have a particular interest in its success. And really having something worthwhile come out of it. And that's easily measured by ecosystem health. There's some really low-hanging fruit that can improve the quality of the water, and those actions are being taken voluntarily at this stage. But we do have a wetland project that we're all very excited about, that we're all waiting to go, but we just haven't quite got the go-ahead. I'm happy to keep talking about that, but if there's anything specific.
I had noticed that you had it in your evidence and then you did.
Yeah.
In your summary, you had mentioned it faltering, so I was wondering how things were going. So just coming back to the work that's been done in terms of the application to deal with the future situation. I guess a question for me is, have you been working on the water quality implications of what's going on in terms of the water takes and amounts left in rivers, the rivers and the tributaries and various reaches? Has that been a part of the consideration that you've been giving to the applications for take and use?
In respect of our application consents, yes, water quality is it's certainly a consideration. It's essential. We all want that. There is a lack of information to the sort of status quo situation and what actually is driving those water quality issues. So that is covered reasonably extensively in our application, yes.
So you understand the drivers between input and output?
There are many factors. Mm. High flow can actually increase, perhaps, Didymo. And vice versa. There are different. The river system has many different smaller sections of habitat or environment. And all of those areas have different requirements or different drivers for the quality in that area. Mm. So I can only say it's an ongoing. Water quality is absolutely an ongoing matter that has to be addressed. And flow is not the only driver of water quality.
Right, so the land use change that may arise from particular water tanks and uses, is that factored into the work that you've been doing?
I'm not sure I 100% agree that land use change is actually responsible for changes in water quality.
Oh, I didn't say that. I said, was it factored in?
Is it factored in? Is land use change factored in? There is certainly work on land use change and how it will look in the future, yes. I believe so. It's certainly been looked at it on an economic basis. Land use change is driven by a number of factors and ability to, as it's already been spoken about, land use won't change unless there is a profitability in that shift. Unless it meets the requirements that of permits, there won't be land use change.
In terms of water quality, with or without a relationship with water quantity, I mean, the two I understand to be connected, but water quality may stand by itself on some contaminants, regardless of flow. I think Youth Hollow might be an example of that. But my question for you is this, from the applications that you have launched, has there been goals set regarding the quality of water and what is required to meet the needs of the river, first and foremost, before we even start talking about abstraction?
I believe so.
You believe so?
Yes.
So you've got nutrient budgets and budgets for sediment and the rest of it?
They are probably dealt with more specifically in farm environmental plans, which...
But not actually as conditions of consent?
I think they would be connected to the consent. Mm. I think that's just an absolute given. We've got this. I don't think there's any hesitance or reluctance to have farms mapped with farm environmental plans. Indeed, the whole of the Thompson's catchment does have a farm environmental plan. I guess just am I understanding that question correctly? If it's addressed, if water quality and land use is addressed on farm, there is a certain assumption that could be made that it's also contributing to the main stem. If that quality is coming from land use.
As opposed to, for example, sediment from old mining tailings, yes. which are washed down the river in a fresh river flood.
Or, of course, existing resource consents held by, for example, the Central Otago District Council for the Omakau wastewater treatment site.
Oh, yes. That's currently before the court, or High Court, is it?
They have a consent to continue what they're doing, yes. Yeah.
My understanding, and my imperfect understanding of the water plan, is that there are no catchment or on-farm limits set in relation to a broad range of contaminants for any user, now beyond primary sector to urban as well as rural. Is that right? My understanding right?
Just so I got that correct, you are asking if there are any particular limits set for other than primary sector.
Primary sector and other than primary sector in the plan. If you don't know, just say
so. I don't believe so.
Okay. The other thing that I took notice of in your evidence is that you are now talking about climate change on the first page, and I noted methane and nitrous oxide, which, as I understand it, are the key emissions from the primary sector, which the government has policy about in terms of the reduction of those two, together with other greenhouse gases. Yes. And you seem to be involved in that. Is that through the government and Māori Action Climate Plan, or is that something else?
It is to a degree. We supply Fonterra, who have a program to... it's probably a double approach, really. Mm. Fonterra have a commitment to that alliance to provide a report on their suppliers. So basically, this information that we receive fulfills the requirement for Fonterra suppliers for that joint industry, etc., climate action plan. Mm. Fonterra also have a very detailed program of trusted goodness that is probably doubles as a environmental within New Zealand, environmental reporting within New Zealand, but it also covers their markets overseas, because of course we actually export 95% of the milk that's produced by Fonterra, and those international markets are quite demanding of credibility of their product. It covers animal welfare, it covers people welfare, environmental obligations, it covers community. It's a pretty wide-ranging program that has got to the stage of actually, if you achieve all aspects, you will receive the farm gate milk price, but if you do not, you will be discounted in your payout. So it's a good incentive.
Very yes, good. It is. Yeah. Looking at methane and the emission of methane from animals, is that just a quick calculation as opposed to a measurement?
It's hugely complicated.
What are you doing there?
And that is information is basically provided annually to Overseer, that glorious database calculation.
So this is an input. Methane's an input into Overseer? Or...
It's reported on from overseas, okay. So it must actually have a calculation.
Yeah. And was it, is that based on your number of animals and the type of animals? Because, of course, dairy cows aren't the only thing to produce methane. But
it's stocking rate.
Stocking rate.
Stock class. What they've been fed,
Where
that food comes from, whether it's bought in or it's grown on farm, the inputs that are required, whether it's what type of fertiliser is required to actually produce that output, whether the inputs into your farm balance your measurable product off-farm, and if there's a surplus figure, well, usually there will be a surplus figure, where does that surplus figure go, what's it made up of? So it's relatively new. Do I understand it completely? No, I only know I've got to understand it because until I do, I can't do anything about it.
So with the methane it being an output of, I guess, overseer, you're having to report that methane and report nitrous oxide to Fonterra.
Yes.
And I understand that there are government targets to reduce methane, and methane, as I said, is not only produced by dairy cows. At the moment, as Fonterra, what if anything is happening in terms of the attainment of those targets?
So Fonterra are establishing what those emissions on farm are. The other industry bodies are providing research. I guess Fonterra will be supporting those as well as to what you actually do about it.
Right.
I certainly do not buy into plant a pine tree. However, I am very much into planting native forests, native trees for that. There's inherent difficulties in that, of course, establishing them for one thing in Central Otago climate. And at this stage, I'm not even sure that those plantings actually qualify for carbon credits. So there's a lot of work to be done there, and it does essentially become political as well. So I guess genetics, the animal itself, her digestive system, there is room for effective research to come out from that. Also diet, methane inhibiting aspects of a cow's diet.
One of the uncertainties that primary sector have, but actually everybody else in the country has, but is climate change and change required over the next 10 years until 2030, significant change, both urban and rural, as I understand it, and then to, you know, and then eventually to 2050, meeting net zero emissions. So that's one big uncertainty.
Yes.
And the obvious two impacts are the ones that you've noted, which is methane and nitrous oxide, because there's a policy about reducing those quite significantly. How are you going to do that? I don't know. But anyway, that's the policy. That's an uncertainty.
Yes.
Then you've got other uncertainties in terms of water quality. I think it's an uncertainty in as much as you've got nothing in the plan, in the operative plan, and so that's the plan to come. And so one of the things that's troubling the court is if you invest now for 30 years or 35 years in wide-scale change across Marahiakea, what does that investment look like when we start to account for our global emissions reduction and national targets and what is required in terms of putting first and foremost the health of our water bodies? The investment decisions on the back of that now, there is change coming, and we don't know what that looks like. And it's an awful position to be in.
Yes, we've been there since...
And you've been there.
We're still there.
And you're still there.
And I don't see a way out.
No.
A pathway out, just quite yet.
Unfortunately, the pathway is through it to get to the other side of this one. And I think that's the issue for the court is, you know, you go with the signal and the plan, which is hold fire because there are both global, national and local issues at play here? Or do you say, well, make that investment anyway, and no doubt that that will be worth tens of millions, and then find that it might be walked back on a review? So what's your thinking about that?
Any operative plan has had review, callback, or new plan changes announced. To bite-size it is probably the only way to manage such a massive period of change coming ahead of us.
Bite-sizing it is something that I can see that could be done under the MPS for freshwater management. It's not about cutting people all off tomorrow. It's about actually what are the key issues that you're working on and working on that over step change over a period of years.
So we can certainly... When I say bite size, I mean we start with a set of rules that we know, right?
Yeah.
Like, here we go, guys. This is what we're doing. Fine. If over time, that whatever time that is, to actually finalise the science around what is effective climate change mitigation, can't wait for that. So there has to be procedure.
Yeah.
One, you've got to keep your grassroots monkeys working, doing what they're doing, contributing to really sound progress. Because it is progress over time. Mm. It's not progress of, oh, well, let's do this now and next week everything's hunky-dory. It doesn't work like that. As well, I'm sorry, I'm being facetious. But
no, you should be. But, you know, I don't mind a frank discussion. Really, I don't, because you need frank discussions to understand where this could go. What are our options here?
Yeah. I actually think people, all people, any people who are here today or tomorrow and the next day are all aware, and actually this is something that's it's bigger than an individual, and it must have a collective solution. Meanwhile, though, someone's paying. Someone's paying, and I guess that's where the craw sticks. Because is that paying going to have a payback? I don't know.
I don't
fancy your job, to be fair.
I don't fancy my job either. But, one of the problems I suspect that we've seen over the last 30 years is that farmers have been told that their effects are no more than minor or minor, and it turns out that that might not be right. And so, you know, the signalling into the primary sector has been wrong as well. So, but that's, you know, that is to do with language. It's to do with it's to do with outcomes or the absence of outcomes. It's to do with a whole lot of things, which is no doubt why we're thinking about reviewing that act. Mm.
And also, there were an awfully lot of perfectly acceptable solutions to some primary sector activities, some industrial activities, that are just purely and simply, what were we thinking? I mean, who builds a freezing works beside a river? Oh, we do that so that it's got a little flush hole. You know, really?
Mm. But that's society moving on, what's acceptable.
Exactly. And so
then it is not acceptable now if it was ever acceptable to Māori, which no doubt it was not. Even at its beginning.
I absolutely agree. And there are still many consents that are actually valid for effluent to be, speaking agricultural effluent, dispersed to fresh water. Who does that now? Voluntarily. Do not do that.
So how do you see us reconciling? This is complex. How do you see that this... I mean, I know you'd say give us a 35-year consent, but how do you see in terms of the court's process and the change? Because now we are in quite a clear period of change.
The framework has to support the people who make the biggest change and who have the most to contribute either in money or resources. And in some way, that has to be reconcilable with a workable, flexible set of rules. Those rules need to be flexible enough to account for, well, actually, science has told us this now. Can we go back and apply that knowledge to rules that have already been set?
How do we pick that thinking up in this plan change?
I think short term, and I can't not come back to it. Short term will not encourage behaviour change.
No, it won't.
And so, it won't buy in investment. Can't. It's just exclusive.
But do you want investment where that investment itself might be undermined on a review by the time that people in communities catch themselves up.
It's an absolutely fair comment. However, we are actually already facing that repeated expense. So
you're doing what, sorry?
We feel that we're already really facing a repetition of expense. I'm not sure which one will be more expensive.
Yeah, you mean when we get to at the end of our six-year consent that we're going to have to do it all over again?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it could have been Anna Gillespie who said, do it all over again for another short-term consent.
Yes.
And I get that anxiety.
Yes.
But do it all over again for a longer-term consent, which is now tuned into, you know, the range of issues is what the proposal is from the Regional Council.
I think I would prefer a regime that would allow a retrospective application of new facts, new science, new solutions that aren't immediately obvious, but they will become more obvious.
And the answer to that is, well, just review the consents, and then the difficulty with that is that there is sunk cost in that resource consent, and which sunk cost will be used as a reason not to move forward. And that I think is the sticking point.
Who would make the call on that cost? Whether that cost is too high, is it the regulatory body or
the regulatory body? Well, it'll be put to something that the regulatory body must take into account, the ongoing viability of the PIM.
That's fair.
Why would you leave that to a regulatory body? I don't know, but it's written in the Act. Because actually, you know, other farmers will say over this week that it is up to the individual to assess what their risk is going forward and to make investment decisions based on that risk. But then again, the Act also allows those investment decisions to be brought to the fore and taken into account, particularly where the viability of the business is affected. So it's kind of like, you know, we hear it both ways.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree because the council's catch-up expenditure to just attempt to get to deemed permit expiry in 2021 has been huge. Whereas they did indeed have an opportunity to be part of an ongoing process for a considerable period of time.
But is the answer to punish the council?
Not at all. I bet I feel sorry for those guys. I really do. And they keep leaving their jobs, you know, and that's no good for us either. So I actually place a lot of faith in grassroots solutions. And the peer pressure from those, it's not even a written rules, it's just almost a, right, guys, here's the problem. I'm sure if we all work together, we can actually achieve this on this patch. That patch becomes, and it spreads. So I actually prefer a bottom-up range of solutions. And what are the solutions? Don't know 100% yet, but we need to get started with this. This is step one. And I actually think that there is motivation amongst the agricultural sector. And I'll just throw this in here. Sorry for the older people, and I'm one of them. Time will actually cure a lot of resentment and resistance to change because we die out. And the younger ones come through with a completely different look, attitude, approach to their responsibilities as a citizen, no matter what their industry or activity.
Yeah, yeah, and that's very much in evidence, in the evidence.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
I hope that I've contributed something to that.
You
I've actually
contributed enormously. Still don't know what the answer is, but you contributed enormously. Actually, you have advanced our understanding of Manahere Kia significantly, so I do thank you for that.
Thank you. I didn't for one minute think that it was such a cumulative process, actually, of discussion and understanding.
Yeah, so, well, yeah. That is what it's about. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think so anyway, so I am very grateful. Now, anything arising from the courts? I was going to say conversation, but it's actually the court's questions. Yes. Nothing? All right, very good. So we'll call it quits. Everybody wants lunch. Yes, we do. We want lunch. And so we're going to be back here at 2:15. Thank you. All rise.